please take the roll?
Chair Tuttle.
Present.
Commissioner Bowl.
Present.
Commissioner Dirksen. Commissioner Fisher.
Here.
Commissioner Jensen.
Here.
Commissioner Rousey.
Here.
Commissioner Stanger.
Here.
Did we hear from Commissioner Dirksen?
I didn't today. I don't know if any.
All right, thank you. Now is the time we have to decide for comments from citizens, and seeing none, we'll move on to approval of minutes, which we also don't have. There's no public hearing, so on to old business. The Planning Commission findings and conclusions for transportation impact fees. And that is presented by Brad.
Thank you. This came to you, to amend the transportation impact fees as required by the Monroe Municipal Code, that they go up each year according to the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index. This year's increase is 0.29%. You held a public hearing at your last meeting, and no public comment was taken. Then the commission directed staff to verify needs and conclusions in support of a recommendation of approval to the city council, and that has been provided to you and for you to review today and approve.
Okay, thank you. I just have a question to start with. This doesn't have anything to do with what we were talking about a few months ago that were like change of use. Remember that discussion about traffic impact fees related to change of use?
Yes, it does sort
of.
Not directly, basically, if you change the traffic, if you decided that you had to collect more fees because of a change of use, this is the fee you would use.
Okay.
But it doesn't.
But we had set some parameters about having 51%.
Right, what is a change of use and things like that? That doesn't affect this.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure. Okay, so any questions or comments from the commission?
So this really is just changing numbers in a table.
Yes. Yeah, that's all it does.
Okay. Commissioner Rousey or Commissioner Fisher, any input? No questions?
No, pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Okay, and these, the changes are established by some other formula. We didn't just randomly come up with the numbers.
They are based on a five-year rolling average of the construction cost index published by the Washington State Department of Transportation.
Great. Thank you. I just want that to be on the record. All right. Well, if there aren't any other comments, there is a recommended action on the back if someone would like to make a motion. Commissioner Jensen.
I move that the Planning Commission recommends that the City Council adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law contained in Attachment 1 to the Planning Commission Agenda Bill, authorize the Planning Commission Chair to sign the findings on behalf of the Commission, and recommend that the Monroe City Council approve the proposed amendments to Monroe's Municipal Code Chapter 20.12.130.
Thank you. We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Commissioner Bull. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. So motion carries 6-0. Yes. And we will move on to the next item of old business is interim zoning amendments to NRC 18.70 marijuana related uses. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at the last meeting on the 24th, Anita first presented the proposed amendments to the marijuana code. And one thing I just wanted to clarify a little bit is, so on March 7th, City Council adopted essentially this emergency zoning regulations. And the difference between what we're doing right now and what council did is they essentially went to an executive session, had some discussion, came out and adopt these regulations. And this was a specific focus, meaning that they wanted to amend the definitions to be consistent with the state regulations. And so once they take that action, it's in an emergency phase, meaning this ordinance or this approval is only good for a 6-month period. And at that time or prior to that, they can either renew or let it lapse. It's much like a moratorium. When you put that in place, you essentially have 6 months to correct that deficiency, or it can be extended for an additional 6 months. And so what this emergency does is it's the band-aid to correct the deficiency. And so what the process we're going through right now is our typical process that we do code amendments. And so we have a 6-month window, which is more than enough time, to correct this and take it through its typical process. And so when you go through a normal code amendment process, you have to go through and you do CEQA, which is the State Environmental Policy Act, even though this isn't actually digging dirt, it's called a non-project action. And it still requires review under those code sections. In addition, it goes down to the state, to the Department of Commerce for review. And so there's a couple different review cycles there. You can request expedited review, which is a 30-day review period, or the typical review period is 60 days. If you go through a comp plan amendment, you have an automatic 60-day review. The difference between an expedited review is if a state agency says, I want to comment on this, it automatically extends out to 60 days. So you can see there's much more process going through the normal cycle, and that's what we're taking it through. So when council wants to go through and do an emergency action like this, they don't have to go through those processes at that time, but eventually it does have to go back through. And I know last time there were some questions kind of beyond what the proposed amendments were, but this one's more of a specific targeted code amendment to bring us into compliance and go through our typical process, meet the state requirements for these amendments. And so these amendments specifically are focused on that marijuana cooperative definition and changing it over to meet the state requirements. Normally, under any other type of code amendment, we would bring it forward, we'd have some staff recommended changes, and then we'd turn it over to the Planning Commission for any areas that they wanted to approve or possibly amend. But in this situation, it is more specific just to this area, so we can deal with that emergency process that we're in right now. Does that make sense? Yes. I can clarify in certain areas.
Quick pause. I just wanted to, did you know, Kim, that Diane Hall?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any comments, questions? Commissioner Jensen?
So essentially what this is doing is sort of adding this new definition, marijuana cooperative, to the stuff we already have.
So it's I don't know if the old one. So it was in your last packet, but I don't think Anita put it in the new packet. So it essentially amends the definition. So in your last packet, it would have been on page 204 if you have that. And you can see where it strikes and delete and inserts that marijuana cooperative from collective gardens. And so right now, before the emergency amendment took place, as our code was, those definitions didn't match up because the state changed the RCWs, which in turn typically cities rely on those to reference back to and as the kind of the basis for their code development. So when they changed that, the city didn't change its marijuana ordinance at that time. And then in order to kind of play a quick catch-up game on it, that's why the emergency adoption took place. And said, okay, well, this may provide some gray area here. We don't want to be caught in that gray area, so let's just be specific and match up with the state. And then Anita also put in on her cover memo explanation. I believe there was a question last time as far as does the city allow these various retailers and processors in there? And you can see she went through kind of a more detailed explanation, but the short answer is no.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
And then we plan on the next council meeting to, will we have time to do the public hearing? Okay.
Yeah.
to hold the public hearing on this and then...
For the council meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that a count, it says scheduled the next planning commission meeting. So are we not doing the public hearing?
You would, yeah.
Okay, so we're talking of the next commission meeting?
Correct.
In 2 weeks, will be a public hearing for this?
Correct.
Oh.
And we know, have there been any lawsuits over the, okay.
No, nothing right now to offer any additional clarifications since the state revised the RCWs surrounding this. And I don't know if you remember back, this was during Greg Wire's time, when she was governor. Things got very confused with collective gardens and co-ops because instead of fully vetoing the bill, she vetoed portions of it, which left these huge gaps. And one of the big reasons why you saw these collective gardens or dispensaries going up, you know, along the highways and in these various areas, just because it, so many sections were vetoed out of it, it left a ton of gray. And so people were afraid to move one way or the other. And so that's why that you saw this, one of the reasons why you saw this last big amendment by the state, because it just wasn't working for anybody, and came back and clarified it. Not that it impacts Monroe, but just generally cities like Tacoma essentially gave people that didn't have licenses X days to start moving out. So it really started cleaning up these unlicensed or unregulated cooperatives that were going on.
Commissioner Rossi,
Ben,
is the public hearing only in regards to the collective gardens? It's not in regards to marijuana related uses, right?
Correct. Yeah, the memo was just in response to a question from the last meeting of there was some confusion if they did or didn't, and yeah, the short answer is no.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. No one else? So we don't have any recommended action, that was just informational?
Correct.
So we can move on to, I keep covering up my agenda.
Just,
oh, go ahead, yes.
One question. I don't know the background of why. So Monroe, through the mayor and the city council, has basically banned all types of marijuana businesses.
Correct.
Is this common, like Duval, you know, Stonewall, or Snoqualmie? Everybody wants to push it to cities like Everett.
It's a community. This is one of the things typically when I had to take it through, 99% of the time I provide a staff recommendation. And for example, in Duval, I did not provide a staff recommendation because it's very much a how a community feels approach. Duval does not allow them, Snoqualmie does not allow them. They had very local residents that said we don't want them. But there are cities that don't see anything wrong with it. And you know, or the majority don't see anything wrong with it. And one of it all depends. I mean, it's very much a jurisdiction. I worked in one jurisdiction where if you looked at the voting numbers for legalizing it, they overwhelmingly voted yes to legalize marijuana, but when it came down to establishing a store or something in their city, they overwhelmingly did not support it.
No,
so
not in my backyard.
Exactly. So it's been kind of it's a mixed bag. As far as, you know, who allows it and who doesn't, but you're right, most of the bigger cities do. They went through and established certain areas. Under the original criteria, they were so restrictive, like for example, Duval, you could not physically site a store in that city because there were so many parks in the buffer areas that it essentially restricted it down to a little chunk of undeveloped land.
Which is what they were pushing the commission to do for like three different meetings, make the buffer zones bigger and bigger to essentially not allow them. Yeah. And so we sent the maps back and said, if you guys want to ban it, then just ban it. But
right.
I can't, were you were here then? I think it was cloudier even too, just because our city tends to side on more caution, and it wasn't clear if there would be, you know, federal repercussions since it's not federally legal. I think that was a cited factor as well.
And they, you know, when the rules were initially in place, there was that big court case, I think it was federal way, that was kind of, unfortunately, the test case for it. And the judge ruled and ruled on a very specific section of the RCW saying cities do have the ability to outright ban them. Since the rewrite, some of that stuff's changed that the ruling was based off of. And so we're kind of back in this gray area a little bit. However, we're not the only ones. There's a lot of cities that don't allow it. Maybe even Pierce County doesn't allow it. But,
well, no one wants to be the first to take on the federal government in a lawsuit or...
or the state.
Or the other way, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of, it's a rough area.
Everybody's kind of like, well, what are they doing? What should we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and by no means is unusual for a city to ban it outright.
Anybody else? Okay, then we will move on to new business with Shannon. Puget Sound Regional Council Vision 2040. We're on.
Good evening. I'm Shannon Russell, planner for the city. And I'm here to give you a brief overview of Vision 2040, which is the PSRC's regional growth strategy. And overall, what Vision 2040 is, it's a long-range planning strategy for central Puget Sound, and that would include Kitsap, King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. And essentially, it's all of those jurisdictions working together to come up with regional strategies addressing growth management, the environment, the economy, and transportation. So, strives to move Puget Sound towards a sustainable future. And the reason for this is because we have, obviously, as you're aware, a population that's growing at a tremendous pace in this area. So the idea of Vision 2040, it's a plan to keep up with that population growth while preserving existing resources and also saving resources for the future. There are four parts to Vision 2040. The first being a sustainable environmental framework. And so basically the role of the environment and how it affects our lives. Part two would be a regional growth strategy, which I think is what you hear of the most. And that is, their words, an ambitious and achievable approach to focused regional growth, to a focused regional growth pattern. And it places future development within urban areas, specifically within urban growth areas. Additionally, then there are multi-county planning policies, so that would be part three. And these policies address the following areas: the environment, development patterns, housing, the economy, transportation, public services. Starting to see a theme with the topics here. And the policies actually provide guidance to implementing a regional growth strategy, so in part two. Part four is how you would implement these policies that are the policies in part three, and it also addresses tracking the progress of implementing those policies. And in case you're not aware, I thought I would give a little rundown of what the PSRC actually is, Puget Sound Regional Council. It's a regional planning agency, and it's also a transportation planning organization. Actually, I interned there like 14 years ago, so. And it, like I stated, it's council of cities, towns, all jurisdictions within those four counties. Well, 71 jurisdictions of the 82 within those four counties. And provides a regional level forum for addressing the issues of these four counties, specifically growth management, the environment, the economy, and transportation. And additionally, something, yeah, sorry about the logo, it's supposed to be coming out. Additionally, something that maybe isn't as common of knowledge is it helps jurisdictions within those areas secure federal funding for transportation projects. It's also a leading source of regional data. There's a reason for that. Okay, so I'm assuming you guys are aware of the Growth Management Act. It comes up a lot. So it was passed in 1990 to deal with project growth at that time. And it is a way of ensuring coordinated growth throughout the region, throughout the state. But in this case, we're applying it to the Central Puget Sound region. And it requires that the fastest growing counties, such as the ones around here, that we plan extensively, we manage our growth. And there, it provides for 14 goals within RCW 3678. And these goals address the following topics. The Shoreline Management Act was not originally a part of these goals. So if you notice, your agenda bill says something about 13 goals. So the Shoreline Management Act actually was added later as an additional goal. Or the provisions of the Shoreline Management Act. And in addition to, so Vision 2040 was drafted and adopted subsequent to GMA to implement the policies in this region. It was also updated in 1995 so that the policies were more current. Or, I'm sorry, Vision 2020 was the original one, which makes more sense. And then in 2003, the executive board of the PSRC decided that they wanted to update Vision 2020. So you have Vision 2040 coming around in 2008 as the update. And Vision 2020 was actually the first regional growth management document out there. So back to Vision 2040, as far as regional growth, so it's, like I said previously, it looks at different ways to accommodate different shares of population and employment growth, and I believe you have a map that is attachment two. Within these four counties into different types of cities. So I'll break that down on the next slide. But there are two parts to the regional growth strategy. And that's the first, that you have growth where there's existing growth. So you're placing growth within those urban growth areas so that the lands outside of the urban growth areas can be preserved. And the second part of it is that it assigns numbers by regional geographies. So what that means is it divides up the cities based on the map. Get an idea of that. And additionally, it provides specific guidance for the distribution of growth. So this is where you get your billable lands analysis from. There are growth targets, full of growth targets that are decided based on the Office of Financial Management's population estimate. And the jurisdictions that are involved in accommodating these growth targets, so every 8 years or so, we have to prove that we have the capacity to meet our growth targets. So these jurisdictions will sit around and actually argue over who gets how many targets. So it's a very hands-on process. But so each jurisdiction in this, well, in the state that plans under Growth Management Act is assigned some of these growth targets. And like I said, you know, we are periodically required to prove that we have the capacity within the city to accommodate the growth targets. Now, I'm going to come back to that because that's very important for what we're going to be doing this year in terms of adopting a unified developer regulations. Going back to map. Here are the different regional geographies and the differences between each. So you have, as the first one, metropolitan cities, and those are the big cities you think in each county. Your Seattle, your Tacoma, and those are central cities that serve as hubs, essentially. Right under that would be your core cities, also large regionally designated growth centers. They are supposed to accommodate a significant share of future growth. Then next you find where Monroe is, if you can see the little, the map in the bottom there. Monroe is classified as a larger city. You can see our UGA in the white. And we are surrounded by natural resource land and rural areas, so that's interesting. The defining factor for to be designated as a larger city is that you have to have a population that's 22,500 or more. And what was this population, it seems kind of random, is it just seemed to be the natural break when they were looking at cities that weren't metropolitan cities or poor cities. Next you have the small cities, which are, it says, locally designated city or town centers. And those provide basically local services. So they're not regional in nature. And they can be diverse. You can have rural areas, you can have subdivisions that look a lot like the urban areas in larger cities. And unincorporated urban growth areas, that's supposed to be one of the main headings. Sorry about that. So this is the largest amount of land that you have in any of these divisions. We've got, once again, very diverse throughout the urban growth area. I mean, it's right on the fringe of the urban area, but also kind of a buffer between the rural areas. The rural areas, exactly what you're probably thinking. They're not intended to develop like, even a smaller city would. And this is partially to retain the cultural, economic, and rural lifestyle that you would associate with those particular lands. Natural resource lands are designated for preservation, essentially. So it's your agricultural, forest, and mineral areas. And they are supposed to be permanently protected from incompatible uses. So something that I stated previously was that we were going to come back to how this is actually pertinent to what we're about to do. Part of the reason that we're doing this update is that you went through the periodic comprehensive plan update process recently. And a lot of places in the city, our comprehensive plan land use designation, so those land use designations that show where we want those parcels to be in the future, how we want them to be used, they don't match up with the zoning of those areas. And so if we do rezones of these parcels, because we are required to be in compliance, our comprehensive plan is required to be in compliance with our development regulations. If we rezone these areas to be in compliance with our comp plan, development regulations are required to be in compliance with our comp plan. So if we rezone these areas, we still have the same buildable lands analysis, we have the same growth targets. The same number. So we're going to have to show with these rezones that we are meeting our required capacity. In addition to that, any of the proposed development regulations, we have to show, in addition to compliance with our comp plan, we have to show that we are furthering the goals of Vision 2040. So as a larger city, we are required to take on a certain amount of growth. We are a developed area, so keeping development for development. And so this is something basically to keep in mind as we go through the code update process. So I'm happy to take any questions. I know that was kind of a run-through, high-level presentation. So yeah, I'm happy to take any questions at this point.
Commissioner Jensen.
So when I looked at the map, I could only have around Monroe. The gold color parts, or the orange parts, that's the protected natural resource. So future expansions of our UGA can't go into the orange, but it could go into the light green because that's just rural. Is that correct?
So it, yes, is is the straightforward answer. Of course, county sets those, it's not impossible to change your UGA. But
who sets the UGA?
The county.
The county sets the city's, each city's UGA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're responsible, essentially, the way it trickles down is it hits the counties. The counties are responsible for establishing the urban growth areas. And if you want an amendment or change to those urban growth areas, you have to go through the county. But that is a very, very difficult process. I think, I don't know, Shannon, if you were telling me or not, that last year only two cities were allowed to adjust their urban growth areas. And they keep a tight leash on it because they want you to continue to grow in that. They don't want this, they don't want everybody to have 4 units per acre throughout and then just sprawl, because that's one of their reductions, is they want some more buildup in the core areas. And one thing I've noticed coming from King County to Snohomish County is there's two different, it's kind of opposite problems. Is King County is begging for more population in their urban growth areas. And going back to Puget Sound Regional Council, who their big leverage is, and Shannon pointed it out, is they control transportation funding, the majority of it, the federal transportation funding. So you run afoul of PSRC, you lose your transportation funding, which is millions. Even for Monroe, it's millions of dollars. And but here in Snohomish County, talking with some individuals up at Everett, they feel they're putting too high of a population target on them. And they're saying, we don't have that industry that comes in here and builds 10-story high-rises for residential development. We build 3-story high-rises for residential development. And so if we took this 3 stories and we expanded it out in all of our residential area, we still wouldn't meet the population targets. And so there's a bit of a disproportion. I don't know how they're, or if they're going to fix it, but there's definitely from the kind of the steering committee that I'm part of for Snohomish County, they have gone through and submitted comments back to PSRC saying, you know, we agree with certain portions, you know, certain portions we don't agree with. But yeah, a lot of this, you see just that growth pushing out from King County. And I think they're trying to distribute it a little more evenly and push that growth.
So something interesting. So do you know about the bright line for dwelling units per acre that used to be a big issue for most cities, especially if you still have people on septic? So it was really hard to get that, you know, that density within the city. Something that, so, you know, that was eliminated through the courts. And when that was eliminated, you basically saw a lot of cities concentrating their density in their downtown areas. So that was a bit of a change on the landscape that you started to see. It seemed to be a little bit more uniform here, because our downtown area is not particularly residential. I always thought that was an interesting pattern. The two previous jurisdictions I worked for in Washington were both, their UGAs matched basically where their city boundaries were, because they were totally built out. And so their growth targets kept increasing. So they were always upsetting certain areas just to be able to have the capacity to accommodate the growth. So this is a really interesting, to me, this is a really interesting way that development plays out on the landscape. And there are lots of variables that come into play.
How often do they set the growth targets?
About every 8 years. So it goes, there's a process to this. You've got, you have to do your comp plan update every 8 years, and prior to that, the growth targets are set, and then you do your buildable lands analysis to prove that you can accommodate those. So it's essentially a precursor to the comp plan update, and it allows us to draft our comp plan update, essentially, because we know at that point, you know, where the, you know, how much we need capacity-wise for utilities. We need to know what sort of services. We also have to prove that we can meet a certain employment growth target. So it guides the drafting of our periodic comp plan update. And
so they just did that before we did our comp plan?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't the numbers come back lower than what they have previously published? What,
yes, actually. I know that there is a discrepancy.
I think there was. So then
120 or something, 128 or something like that.
They require you to make plans for a number and take certain actions, but then if you don't have that, if that's no longer the accurate number, then you have empty homes and...
Okay. If you have, right, if you have way more capacity than your growth targets, you don't necessarily have to build out to that. I mean, you can just, you're just showing that you can meet that growth target. Essentially, that means you don't have to do anything if you don't want to. It's when you can't meet your growth target that you have to prove that you will be able to provide that capacity somehow.
So is there some other practical application for us in this, or it's just some background information to keep in mind as we're...
Okay.
So this just basically explains that as a larger city, we have a responsibility to plan for growth, whether we want it or not.
That's correct.
And our city limits can actually go out to our UGA? Is that based on the annexation schedule or something else?
Correct. It's based on annexation. And so one difficult issue we ran into was there was... you can see on this map, so this has been going on for a number of years. This area kind of over here shaded off. That was essentially a contested area where the city felt it was in our urban growth area, and the county said, no, it's not. Through, I don't know, somebody's records ran afoul years back. This has been going on for years and years. And so one thing that the agreement that was reached was, county said, okay, city, you start annexing all of your area that you have hanging out there, and then we can come back to the table and we can talk about you growing in this direction. And so the city started an aggressive annexation schedule in 2008, 2009, and started pulling in some areas and then ran into the areas, Robin area. And so this is, I'm trying to not keep my personal opinion out of this, so they allowed quite a bit of development in, the county allowed quite a bit of density in the city's urban growth area. And so you're essentially talking about an area that's largely built out. They're on septic up there, but they have established septic systems that they have paid for, and they're happy on septic. And they have their water up there. It may be on city, I don't know if the city took over that water district or not. And so when the city was trying to go into these areas, they came back and said, why would we go into your city? You don't have anything to offer us. You know, we would essentially, we have what we need out here. And so the city went through several different methods to try to get them annexed in the city, and came back with resounding no's each time. So now the city's caught between a rock and a hard place, because we're supposed to be annexing that area into the city, because these areas on the outlying, and this may be a little bit of personal opinion, but you essentially have one sheriff that covers this massive jurisdiction, and if there's a 911 call, who's going to get there first? And if you look at these outlying areas, and the nearest Snohomish County Park is miles and miles away versus all these parks that we have in Monroe, what parks are those people going to go use? And so in my view, you're essentially subsidizing those uses for those outside people. And so that's one reason to bring them in and bring them into the tax fold. And that's what we're trying to do, but we're having trouble with these developed out areas being content where they are, not wanting to come in. So now, and this is right about the time I left, we got stuck in this area, in this Robin Hood area. They didn't want to come in. We wanted them into the city, and we're not fulfilling our agreement to the county to annex it in our UGA. So this is where we kind of sit right now.
The residents have they can vote?
They did take a vote
on whether or not they get annexed.
Didn't annex it, incorrect. Yeah. And it was like a 90% knew we didn't want to annex.
But they're in our school district zone too as well, right?
Yeah, two different animals. So school district is they're almost looking like a separate government.
Right, but they're using the road and everything coming into.
Oh, correct. Correct. Yeah. So there is in. And in all fairness, you know, as far as that's why I didn't get into roads, we use a lot of roads in the county too. You know, because Monroe is more of an island city, we're transplanted to the same as Newell was, you know, going along county roads in order to, you know, go to different destinations. But yeah, there are impacts, and it's been something that the city has been working on for a long time as far as annexing those people in to try to keep those, you know, those numbers like we're trying to meet for the Puget Sound Regional Council, and just the general growth of the city. But so that's going to be something we're going to have to work out with the county. And
how often can it come up? When was the last time?
They amended their UGA?
Yeah.
I don't think it has, it's been well before the last time. So I don't think there have been very many major amendments since they established urban growth areas for what cities can annex into. And they've made it, they specifically, both King and Snohomish County, have made it very hard to change those. With good reason. You want these established areas and you want people, you know, constantly switching around. But as far as trying to go back and revisit, that's something that's also on the table, that as staff and talking with the mayor, that we may revisit next year as far as starting that conversation with the county, because it does take a while to go through stuff.
It's a conversation with the residents, though, mostly, right?
Oh, as far as, are you talking like completely pulling them out, yeah, or like moving our urban growth area? Or just
annexing that area, yeah.
We have not approached the residents again about annexation.
Since?
In 2010, maybe, around there was the last big no-go. And so to complicate things a little bit more is, when you go through an annexation, it's also subject to boundary review board review and criteria, and they're BRB for short. And when you go through and say, you know, we want to annex an area, actually part of the goal was to annex this large vacant section that we wanted to build out. And so the city initially started that annexation proceedings. Boundary Review Board came through, and they like nice straight lines. They like boxes. They like things that run along roads. So the city submitted for it. BRB came back and said, no, you're kind of, this area is kind of this crooked little triangle area. We want you to take in this box. Well, when they took it and took it from that triangle area and made this box, you pulled in a lot of those existing residents in there who count towards the vote on that annexation. And so that overwhelmed the vote of those individuals who originally wanted and approached the city to annex in and squash that whole area from annexing into the city. And so it's difficult. One example I bring up is in King County, if you're in an urban growth area, you have to set aside 70 or 75% of your developable land if you want to, say, subdivide the property. And the purpose of that is to give those people a carrot to annex into a city. And so they won't allow a full build out in the UGA. And so they keep a chunk of it undeveloped. So when the city does annex it in, they can build out under their street standards, you know, provide that curb gutter sidewalk if that's, you know, the county's not requiring that, and to build out under city standards. And so that's a big change between, or a big difference between King and Snohomish County. And they've been working on it for about 22 years. These regulations as far as what the county sets up and what cities do. In the county's defense, it's impossible for them to adopt each individual city's regulation and apply it to those urban growth areas. So they have come the city's way a little bit as far as requiring more curb gutter sidewalk. Because if you go up there in Robinhood, there's not a sidewalk to be seen. And so they're pushing those standards, general standards, a little bit more. But I think there's still a lot more discussion to be had as far as that goes. But again, with PSRC's plan and trying to accommodate that growth, it would be, you know, beneficial for the city to annex in, even though it's already been built out. The bad thing is when somebody builds out substandard, then the city's going to be on the hook for that area in the future as far as, you know, building out those sidewalks when the time comes or when the funding comes. Because you do want those safe routes to school, and you want people to be able to go through those areas.
So if they would, using Robinhood, if they would annex it in, then it would become just the city's responsibility for curb gutter, sewer, water. It wouldn't be anything on the residents.
So,
is that correct?
So not 100%.
Okay.
So like things like sidewalk, that's one of those things that the city would develop as funding became available. As far as sewer and water, that would be on the resident. And so it would essentially be, we have existing regulations, because there are still some sewer enclaves inside city limits. where people are still on sewer. And what it does is it sets, and I don't know which graph is still here, it sets a distance. And so if your septic tank fails and you're within X feet of a sewer line, you must connect to that sewer line now. And so it would eventually, over time, just kind of slowly pull these people in and put them on septic on their dime. And then the water, it all depends on what agreement the city has with that water district. And I know the city took over a couple of different water districts, so they may control water right now. But with water districts, they may continue, that district may continue just to serve that area and they wouldn't be on city water. Or unless some agreement is made in between. You know, there's some cities that don't have water and sewer departments because they're all districts. Their entire city is served by a district. I think city of Sammamish, is that one?
And I guess something else to keep in mind with all of this, in addition to how it ties in with potential future annexations, and these processes obviously come up a lot faster than we expect. So we're getting ready to roll into another cycle. Our next comp plan update's due in 2023. So all of this is actually getting queued up right now. So just something to keep in mind. It is actually, it might seem like it's years away, but it's actually pertinent to today.
Hopefully it'll be a smaller animal next time since we were so thorough this time.
Yeah, and one thing that Shannon brought up was about our buildable lands report. And so buildable lands report take a ton of GIS work. And so one thing that if you're not familiar with GIS, is a very cool mapping system that you can go through and it has an access spreadsheet behind it, and you can do all these great calculations off of it, and, you know, estimate units per acre. But when we go through this major code update and we're looking at, because the comp plan gives us ranges in like our low densities, anywhere between 3 and 5, it's some of the stuff we're not going to be able to give you an automatic answer. It's going to be, okay, this is, we'll start off with, what do you think the zoning should be here? Then it's going to be, well, Shanna, going back and then running all these different numbers or updating GIS layers to see, okay, where's this put us at overall, as far as what we want to build at. So there's going to be a lot of that during our major code cycle, just so we're making sure we're not going completely south of, you know, where we're supposed to be at, or too far north of where we're supposed to be at. So,
and on top of that, it's, there are different, you know, characteristics of the landscape, like critical areas that eat into our developable land. So it's also, there's going to be consideration of where houses are placed on the lot, if they can be subdivided on subdividable properties, if the value of the land versus the value of the house, you know, if the land is worth so much more than the house, makes it more likely that the house will be demoed. So in addition, I mean, it's just not a straight calculation. We have to apply different factors to each parcel to determine if they are indeed redevelopable, or if they will redevelop within the next few years.
Yeah, one idea, and I'm not sure how we're going to do it this time, was literally a lot by lot with an aerial over it, and you went through and you looked at the lot, and sometimes it would come down to where the house was positioned. You know, if the house took up the majority of the front of the lot and you had a long area back, you would get a lower probability of redevelopment, because as Shanna said, that house is worth a lot, the land's worth a lot less, the probability of redevelopment would be lower than somebody would rip down that house to try to get, you know, two additional lots out of it. And so it gets real, real nitpicky and quite a bit of work.
Do we have some other areas in the UGA that are similar to Robin Hood area, or that might go that direction where we will have trouble annexing them in?
So we received a notice of a pre-application meeting, which is exactly, it's just, they haven't submitted anything officially to the county. It's just, hey, we're looking at doing this, can you give us feedback? And that area is just above the farm. And so it's these two large parcels. I know you can't see back here, but if you get a chance and you look at this chunked out area, two, potentially three large parcels out in that area.
Is it on the Chain Lake side or the Woods Creek side?
It is right in between Chain Lake and Woods Creek.
Oh, okay.
And so it's in our urban growth area.
But so do we make we approve the applications, or the county does?
County does. They send us, just as a courtesy, send it to us. Yeah.
And they're able to do that without any consideration to our annexation schedule?
So yes, but we've been in contact with the applicant and telling them the benefits of coming into the city and not developing out any density in the county.
So you solicit the developer a little bit?
Yes, yeah. And so those phone calls have been going on for about a week and a half now.
Are developers usually agreeable to the city's viewpoint, or?
It depends on.
They don't really care.
It depends on so many things. Timing, you know, if they're under the gun and things have, you know, not been going well for them so far and they've, you know, are pretty upside down a lot, maybe less agreeable. The city does have recourses as far as impacts that are outside through the CEQA process, where we can request certain, I'm trying not to go into detail, certain mitigation from those areas due to impacts on the city. So, but however, so there's two types of, so we talk about impact fees, which are essentially mitigation. So all developers that go in and they go to subdivide a property, create a new lot, and then build the house, they're subject to impact fees and capital facility charges. And so impact fees are based on GMA-based, Growth Management Act-based. Prior to this, they were called SEPA-based impact fees. And so essentially, people went through and conducted their own analysis and started charging these impacts through the SEPA process. They found out over time that SEPA-based, a blanket SEPA-based impact fee wasn't as legally defensible as a GMA-based impact fee. However, there's still that animal out there where you can request impact fees through the SEPA process. And it has been done before. The problem is cities were using it more of a blanket-wide approach, which is what the Growth Management Act or GMA-based impact fees are good for. There's also things called capital facility charges, which is your water and sewer. Those are often, they're confused as impact fees, but they're not. They're just charges for hooking into the city system, paying for the treatment plants and pipes and things like that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Comments, questions? All right. Well, and sorry, back to the agenda here. That was informational only as well. Correct? Yes, not much in here. All right, so we will move on to discussion by commissioners and staff. We'll start with Commissioner Dirksen.
Nothing tonight.
Commissioner Ball. Commissioner Stanger. Commissioner Jensen.
Just quick question, as I was looking at this, what is my actual email address? I know it tells me how to log in, but if I wanted to tell somebody, send email to, what is the address?
Is it your username plus?
What's that?
Let them know that Ken's coming.
Yeah. So at the next planning commission meeting, we'll have our IT guy will come.
Okay.
And so this is just kind of a prepper for you.
But will their passwords expire by the next meeting?
I think he just reset them.
Okay.
He did.
Yeah.
And your email address is the first initial of your name and then last name.
At
monroewa.gov. Yeah. Okay.
So he gave us those as your...
I sent myself an email.
Well, that's not hard to do, I'll be able to know.
Appenroe.wa.gov.
Right.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Jensen?
No.
Commissioner Rossi?
I appreciated your education on the GMA tonight. Thank you very much. And that was there.
Thank you. Commissioner Fisher?
I have none.
Okay, I just have a quick, and then it's your turn. Everybody, the police department is starting a new program called Coffee with a Cop, and the first one is on May 16th at Center Pizza from 10 to 11:30, and I think there will be at least 6 officers there, plus Nuke, plus other officers that are on shift that may come in and out when they're not. So you're free to come, it's free coffee, we're doing cinnamon rolls, and you can interact with the police officers, ask questions, anything that you have, want some information on. It's to improve, break down barriers between PD and the community. and I'm really excited about it.
And when is that?
It's May 6th. The first one's May 16th. It's a Tuesday morning from 10 to 11:30. And they'll be rotating around town to different locations. So, and then you probably all noticed, and people ask, the Lake Tide Park is on schedule. So park for the target is Memorial Day weekend. And then I wanted to know, is there Harbor Freight going into the state of Oakland? Okay, thought so. And then how close are we on the downtown allowable uses being adopted? Because already now there's a well pump place with a big ugly sign right in the heart of Monroe.
So that is going not the next council meeting, but the one after that.
Okay. Are there any other...
I might have that flip-flop. No, yeah, I think that's
right. Are there any other applications of for businesses that would not fall into the allowable uses if they're adopted?
I can find out for you.
Okay.
Yeah, Amy has, and also on the city council's, I do a council report, and I told you that I'd bring that to you, and I have it. and so that'll show new businesses coming into town, and their address on it, too. So I have to remember.
Just trying not to like have everything fill up with uses we don't want before we get those.
Get that gavel on power injunction right now.
Right? Just
get the gavel.
Stop. The downtown allowable uses?
No, one thing.
Oh, you know where the junk in the old trunk?
They
moved themselves into part of the building, and now there's a well pump business.
Upstairs.
Yeah, I don't know, but it has that huge ugly sign.
We're
finally going to get rid of the gold place, and now we have that other ugly sign up there.
Is there something going into the gold teeth? We'll take your gold teeth place?
Not quite.
No, so far it's just parking.
Yeah. Okay, and that's all for me. Anything for me?
I do, one thing, so Kim sets out the packets up there, and so in an effort to save time and paper, do most of you bring your packet from home, or do some of you still like it to be up there?
I like it. I try to remember mine, but I often forget it at work because that's where it's delivered.
You want to?
Bring your own.
I don't mind picking it up off the table. Okay.
I try to pick it up, or bring my own. Certainly, sometimes something changes between the time we get the packet. In which case, it's going to have the updated already here.
So if we just print out like four packets and then
and have them
just
available.
In case,
yes, and I just let them on.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I like to write stuff on.
I like to
acknowledge. But I'll still mail them to you.
Yes,
thank
you
very
much.
I try to get it in my car, and just sometimes I go. All right, maybe Shanna? Kim? All right. Last call? What's that?
Sorry.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn then.
Second.
What do you have the first day?
Oh, I thought you said
the interview.
Oh.
I was like,
yeah. I'm fishing for a motion.
Commissioner Rousey?
Fine, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion by Commissioner Rousey. Do we have a second?
Second. Come on.
Seconded by Commissioner Erickson. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.